Welcome to Ellie Chat. Your home for exclusive news and commentary on the internet's only podcast about candlepin bowling. Brought to you by the lords of candlepin, Frank DeLuca and Rich Lamoni. Email the show at alleychat.frankface.net. Now broadcasting from the heart of the Bay State, the host of Alley Chat, Frank Face.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Alley Chat. It is September 16th, 2015. My name is Frank Face, and I am here with Kyle Bruce and Rich Lamoni. And guys, we are among another bowling season. How's it going, guys?
Wonderful.
Great.
It's the season premiere, I guess.
Yes.
Season two.
Season two
of Alley Chat and upcoming season two of Classic Candlepins.
Correct. 2.0 is, I guess I'm the only one calling it that.
Yes. But, well, it sounds like an upgrade to me.
Yes. Well, that's the plan, and it's good to be with you guys this evening.
Likewise, Kyle. Thanks for joining us. And Rich, how are you doing?
Doing all right. Good. Can't complain. Another season underway.
Yeah. We're very excited about that. And I'm quite excited about that because I'm now throwing a bowling ball again.
Accurately. So,
it depends. Times. Yeah, at times. Not in the first string, but maybe in the third string.
Yeah.
Guys, I think first thing we want to talk about tonight is the most recent Pro Series event that we just had at Lucky Strike Lanes in Lynn, Massachusetts. It was the doubles knockout or elimination? It was knockout.
Knockout.
We had, I think, 39 teams or something like that this weekend, so a good turnout. And a couple of I don't know, what would you call them? Younger guys that just kind of, you know, made it all the way to the final. Both teams that made it to the finals were somewhat unexpected. I mean, they're not names that you see all the time. Justin Scally and Jeff Walsh defeated Mike McGinty and Chris Walker 224-221, a very close final match. And guys, I got to say, I'm excited to see some different names up at the top.
Yeah, I mean, I would be right there with you, especially when you consider the pairs that are in this format or that were in the tournament this past Sunday. I mean, they're, you know, we have Ayotte and Beauvais and Marks, Boudreau, Barber, Surrette. I mean, you know, the list goes on. And Scally and Walsh qualified 14th. To make it in there, and McGinty and Walker just barely made the cut at 16. Yeah. And, you know, made it all the way to the final round. So I think it is good to see.
It is. And considering the guys that they had to beat to get there.
Yeah.
You know, it's let's see, Scally and Walsh, they defeated Mark Smith, Chris Sargent. That's a powerhouse team.
Yeah, of course. I mean, they're ranked third going into the knockout rounds. So.
Right. Craig Holbrook, Bobby Whitcomb, these guys, I don't know about Bobby Whitcomb, but these guys are title holders. At least Craig is.
Oh yeah. I mean, and Bobby Witt, this, you know,
if he hasn't won a pro
won
series,
everything there is to win, exactly. Pretty much.
Yeah. If
so,
he hasn't won a pro series, he's won something else.
Right. I mean, obviously Craig's in the Hall of Fame and probably Bobby Witt will be someday as well. So, and they came in, ranked 11th. So, and maybe some of the scorers aren't, you know, what we're accustomed to, but you know, it is very early in the year, and a lot of guys, especially some of the older guys, aren't bowling in the summer. So it takes a little bit to get your feet under you and get your timing back. And, you know, here we are.
Yeah, and I think the youth of the season has a lot to do with it. I mean, you're just coming off the summertime. Like you said, a lot of guys don't bowl that practice league in the summer or competitive league in the summer. And, you know, maybe they consider this kind of an icebreaker tournament.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, but great time for Jeff Walsh and Justin Scally to jump on that opportunity. So congratulations to them. I know, Rich, you were there. Did you stay for the whole day?
No, I had to work after. So once we bowled very poorly as team 39th place out of 39 teams.
Ah, congratulations.
Thank you. Couldn't do any worse than we did. So, I mean, it was a good day.
Yeah, that's worth mentioning.
Yeah, whatever. You know, we didn't bowl well. We didn't have things go our way. We missed shots. You know, just didn't work out for us because we've made cuts and we've made, you know, won some rounds and we're getting there. But this isn't the first time that Justin and Jeff have paired up together and done well in the Pro Series.
That's true.
They were in the Woburn knockout, and they made it to the quarterfinals. And they gave Sacchetti and Godwin a run for their money. But, I mean, that was when Sacchetti and Godwin ran the table, I think, both doubles tournaments that same year. So, yep. I mean, if you're going to lose to a team, at least you're losing to the champion from the doubles knockout the tournament before. So, sure. You know, good for them. So, you know, they've made some noise in the Pro Series, and they're a team to be reckoned with. You can't take them lightly.
Well, you can't take anybody lightly, because especially in a knockout, because anyone can get hot. You know, it's really just all about making the cut and then you see what happens from there.
Yeah, just get in, see what happens.
Right. Yep. Yeah. Exactly.
Because you got to remember, these are one string matches. So, you know, all it takes is that one extra pin over your opponents.
Right. Or, you know, having a bad box.
Exactly.
And, you know, you have a six box or something, and how they can totally turn the table in your opponent's favor, and you don't have enough time to recover because, you know, like we said, it's just 10 boxes.
Yeah, so you run out of time, you run out of boxes.
Exactly.
So I think another thing worth mentioning is the guys that Mike McGinty and Chris Walker had to defeat. They defeated the number one team, the number one seeded team, Jimbo Ayod and Chris Bovaer. Then Jason Doucette, Sweet Lou, Kyle.
Yes, Albergini. Correct. Yes.
And then, of course, Dave Barber, Jeff Surrett. These are, you know, the McGinty Walker, what would you say their combined age is? Maybe just over 40. I'm not terribly familiar with these guys. McGinty, I've heard his name before, but not Chris Walker. You know, really just kind of fantastic bowling from these guys. Not something we expected to see.
Right. And they didn't have the huge totals in the knockout rounds, but they did just enough to win. And, you know, considering those doubles pairs, I mean, 250, 248, 242, they're consistent all the way to the finals.
Right.
And they're three pins short against Scally and Walsh.
Which is not a huge difference, really.
Right. You know. Yeah, exactly. So,
let's see. So one thing I noticed, Dave Barber posted the results on Facebook and on the Campbell Pro Series website. Pro Series has 54 members this year. I don't know whether that's up or down from last year. Are you guys
right about the same?
Right about the same.
I think maybe like they gained a member. Well, I know Fuller's in, and he wasn't in last year. So, and obviously Barber wants a renewed push to gain membership because, that's only going to help come playoff time.
Of course.
You know, if you're a member, then, you know, especially if you win an event, the way the points are broken out, you have a great chance to just make the playoffs just on that.
Well, he also posted a statistic on Facebook, something along the lines of the top 10 guys that came in, you know, that placed in this tournament, some of them weren't members, and they would already own a playoff spot.
Right.
By the end of the year. So it's something really that all the bowlers should be considering if you're bowling an event, because all it takes is that one good day.
Right. And he did the same thing last year after the Lita doubles event, because Mark Ritchie's a guy who isn't a member, and Fuller last year wasn't in. Same kind of thing. They won the event. They would have already been in the playoffs had they been a member. Sarge, same kind of thing. Raises a great point. I mean, there are, you know, it was the first event, so there are, I think, five to go. So,
right.
I think it's $100 this year
to be a member.
Is it 100 or 75?
75.
75. Okay. All right. But 100 to bowl each event.
Yeah.
Unless it's the kids event.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Which we don't have details on that yet in terms of when it is, where it is, or anything like that.
Right.
But the upcoming tournaments that we do have on schedule is the next one will be October 11th, singles knockout. That's at Ryan's in Millis. I remember a couple of years back they did a skins event there, and that's also the new home of New England Candlepins.
Correct.
Because FICO is closed down over the summertime.
Sadly,
yeah. A pretty historic house.
Right.
And, you know, I hear talk of a smaller house going in somewhere in Franklin, you know, somewhere around Franklin Center, but I don't think there's any details hammered out. that's just all hearsay anyhow. But next tournament will be in Millis. That's that Ryan Family Amusements in Millis, and it's the singles knockout. After that, we have the 1st of November, the three-man tournament at Pilgrim. Guys, do you have any opinions on this tournament? I particularly am not a fan of it. I think Pro Series events should be doubles at most.
Because, yeah, you know, it is an unusual combination. I mean, I guess if anything, it shows that the committee is willing, meaning the Pro Series committee is open to trying different combinations to try to gain that not only attendance but also the membership. But again, I don't see a random doubles on there, right?
There is no random doubles this year, and I don't know. Was there one last year, Rich?
No,
there was not. And you know, the Pro Series guys had talked about why they got rid of that, and they said it was because of attendance being down. I haven't seen their numbers. I haven't looked at their numbers, but from what I understood, that was the most popular tournament, in my opinion. I always enjoyed that. I got paired up with Baker up at Lakeside, and of course, he carried me through. However far we went until we met Kevin Davis and Brandon Marks. But I thought that was the most fun, and I thought it attracted most bowlers.
Well, I mean, they have the statistics. We don't.
Sure.
So, this is an example of them, bringing something back, and, with it being at Pilgrim, they've had the playoffs there a couple of years. So,
right.
Going back to a familiar venue. Interesting thing about the schedule this year so far. I mean, we'll see how that kids pro tourney pans out, but no New Hampshire House on the schedule.
It does not seem that way. There's only Massachusetts and one Maine house.
Correct. Yes.
So who knows? Maybe the kid pro tourney will be somewhere up in New Hampshire. It does look like it'll happen in December, but there is no firm date. And like you said, no firm house that we know of. So
right.
We'll see what happens. I believe, I'm not sure if they're starting this year or next year. I believe the Pro Series guys have committed to sticking with only ICBA houses. So that could have something to do with it, although there are ICBA houses in New Hampshire. But, you know, who knows why the decision was made not to have any New Hampshire houses this particular year.
Right. I mean, you know. The obvious candidates would be Lakeside or Lita.
Right.
I suppose Boutwells.
Okay, so next on the list is the January tournament. It's another doubles knockout, which we just had. It's at Sunnyside in Danvers. They were here a couple of years ago. I think it was the first tournament of maybe 2014. Correct. And it was a singles knockout tournament. Yep. Or a singles elimination tournament, something like that. So they're revisiting Sunnyside. I think Sunnyside's a great house.
Agreed.
I wish there was a pro team this year or any other year for that matter.
Well, I mean, they had pro teams for a lot of years. I'm sure. Not sure the decision not to have one. And I think it's been a while since they've had at least one team in that house. But right. Fully automatic. Nikki's always put a lot of money into that house. It was tough at one time, and it's been quicker over the years. But it's really nice. And it's good to see that they have another event.
Very well maintained, too. You know, it's just a
correct
premier house.
And if you're looking for a set of balls, he has a wide selection of bowling balls that you can't find at a lot of other houses. A lot of one-offs.
Yeah, I've heard that he even has like new old sets of Cyclones.
Correct.
That you can find. Yes. So. You know, he hooked me up with a custom pair of shoes one year. He's a good guy, Nick.
Yes.
Great house. I've always liked that house.
Place is great.
Yeah, fantastic.
I don't know if McKinley likes it all that much anymore.
Oh.
Why do you say that?
Oh, I had a pretty good night against McKinley in the New England knockout.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Rich Limoney Show.
How did that end out for you, by the way?
I bowled really poorly in Woburn. Except for the last five boxes of the night.
I was interested that you agreed to Woburn.
I figured I was going to, it was going to be a tough match with Keith no matter where I bowled.
I'd agree with that.
And, you know, from the conversations that I had with Nick, Freshy, you know, the houses that he was throwing out there that were available so that it could be filmed were Lucky, Metro, and Woburn. So out of those three houses, I would be stupid to bull Keith and Metro or Lucky.
Hmm.
So kind of like, well, out of those three houses, where am I going to go? And I hadn't bowled at Woburn in the tournament. So I figured that was another reason why I bowled in different houses every single match. So I wanted to keep bowling in a different house. So I wasn't going to go to Lucky again because I bowled Cheech in the first round at Lucky.
That's actually kind of interesting. I hadn't thought about you having moved around houses so much.
Yeah, because I bowled Beverly against Chris.
Right.
And Baker at Academy and Slink at Sunnyside.
Hmm.
So I wanted to pick another different house.
I just think that's interesting that those are the three houses that you had to go with.
It wasn't
for the end.
We had to go with, but it was ones that we knew that we would be able to record at.
Gotcha.
Given the choice, I probably should have said Candlewood.
That's exactly what I'm thinking.
I hadn't bowled there. And I bowl well there. I just didn't know if the internet was going to work and film it. And, you know, it's the finals. And the finals were filmed there for the last bracket. So I figured, hey, let's do it again.
You know, well, next time you make the final match of the bracket.
It's going to be at Exeter against Winchell.
Okay.
Very good. Short, you know, commute. Not even a commute for me.
Yeah.
I'll be very excited.
Right. You walk there.
Yes.
Well, you heard that here on Alley Chat, folks. Rich is going to be bowling against John Winchell in Exeter during the next knockout final.
Yes.
I do not promise that, but Rich does.
Well.
I just thought it was funny that I said that to him, and I ended up making the finals.
Well, it's a new season. Anything can happen.
Absolutely. Yeah, that is very true.
Are we going to have, Frank, the drawing of the next freshy knockout on Alley Chat?
I assume so.
Yeah, I certainly hope to do so.
I mean, it's going to be after the Worlds, right? I think he pushed it back.
I believe he did push it back.
Which makes sense. I mean, there's a lot going on with these tournaments and everything leading up to that and Sunday Pro. And you know, why not just wait until after? And he also doesn't have 64 bowlers yet.
Well, that's what I was going to say next is, you know, if he does achieve 64 bowlers by the time the Worlds come, perhaps we could even do this at the Worlds. On Alley Chat, because we will be broadcasting from the Worlds up in Canada this year. So we have confirmed that. You will be getting content from both Americans and Canadians and all the like. So,
yes.
You know, go ahead and sign up for Nick Cefaletto's New England Knockout Bracket Tournament. You can join the Facebook group and find out more information about it. Great tournament that he runs, and he's looking for 64 bowlers this time around, and I think he can do it. So give yourself a shot and go sign up.
Are you going to be in it, Frank?
You know, it may not be a bad idea. My goal has been 3 strings a week up till now, and that's been going okay, not great. Pro Series, I think, is kind of out of the question because that's a lot of bowling in one day if you do advance. But the New England knockout bracket is 5 strings. You know, so if you bowl your match and if you move on, you move on. If not, it's not that continuous, strenuous day of bowling. So something for me to consider, yeah. And now that he's pushed it back, that will give me some more time to work on my timing and mechanics and so forth. So good question, Kyle.
Hey, I'm full of them.
I'm sure that whatever match I bowled in, you'd come watch and you know.
Boo and root against you.
I would hope so because that would just make me.
I'll bring my uncle.
Well, okay, so you can root against me, but he will root for me.
Yes. 8, 9, or 10.
Yes. Throw that same ball first now.
Yes.
Good old Uncle Steve.
Yes. God bless.
So, all right, so let's go over the remainder of the schedule for the Pro Series. The next one, singles elimination, will be in February 6th, 2016. It's funny to talk about 2016 at this point, but that will be at Viking Lanes in East Bridgewater, Mass. Rich, do you remember this place? How tough this place was?
Dungeon.
Unbelievable. This is worse than Candlewood, I'm telling you.
I think Candlewood is fast, so we've had this argument many times. Well. But I find it to be more difficult than Wakefield, which I think is the slowest house around.
Kyle, I think you'd really enjoy watching matches at this place.
Oh, no doubt. The aforementioned Uncle Steve has a great story about Viking. Because he threw at a 5 final, he threw 676. And whoever was working there said, well, that's a really good score. It'll probably hold up. the final shift, Hugh Ferguson comes in and breaks an alley record and threw 753. So once again, Uncle Steve is alternate. So I think it's great that there's a, I mean, there is a mix of houses that are in the schedule. You have some that are a little quicker. You have some that are a little tougher. And this is an example of, Viking, being one of the tougher houses. So I think that's awesome. And a singles elimination, event.
It is. And, you know, the last tournament they had there, I think again, was maybe 2013. It might have been
even back further than that.
Perhaps, yeah. It was the Ultimate Ladder. I've always been curious as to why they got rid of that. That seemed like a great tournament to me.
Can you elaborate more on the Ultimate Ladder?
So it was a three-string qualifier.
Right.
They changed it to five. Because the one that I qualified – the Rich show. The one that I qualified at in Academy, it was five strings. They changed it to five.
Okay.
It used to be three. You're absolutely right.
Right. I think the one at Viking, that's the only one I bowled in. So it was a qualifier, regardless of how many. So, yeah. And then you got placed into, according to your score, a ladder. How many did they take?
They had five ladders, so the top 25 made the cut. And then the first five guys that were in group, they were all the one seeds
mm-hmm.
for their own ladders. And it was a random draw for what ladder you ended up in.
Right. So the top five got a bye into the next ladder, correct?
The top five were the one seeds for their ladder. And then, you know, the next six through 10 were the next group of guys. They were the two seed in every ladder. So they would pick a name. So if you were in this, you know, 20 to 25 group or 21 to 25 group, they'd pick a name. You know, Bob Smith. So Bob would go up and pick a card. So he's going to pick from the four seed pile. And he would pick his opponent, and then his opponent would pick who the winner of those two guys would face, who would be in the 16 or the three seeds.
Yeah.
So then that ladder would be finished. Then they'd do it again. They'd pick a five seed, who would face a four seed, who would face a three seed, who would face a two seed, one seed. Then the winner of those ladders would be into a new ladder.
The ultimate ladder
based on their score from the final of their own ladder.
Gotcha.
So whoever the winner was, you know, would reseed one through five, and there'd be another ladder.
And I don't remember how many strings each match was.
One single string.
Okay. I think the reason they might have done away with it because it was a lot of bowling over the course of a day. Mm. But, you know, it was one of my favorite tournaments.
I mean, I can see there potentially – I mean, there's more work to do logistically to pull off that kind of event like that. But I think it – I mean, I'm glad that you guys clarified it because I couldn't remember precisely how it was. But that is intriguing. I'm wondering what the feedback was on that and what the attendance was like to back up the decision not to continue.
Right. I think attendance was pretty good.
You know, I mean, it's come down to basically – knockouts and the 10 stringer, right?
Yeah, there's one knockout, one elimination for singles. And then both the doubles are knockouts. And then there's, 10 stringer.
Right. So, anyway.
Speaking of 10 stringer, that'll be March 5th, 2016. And again, we mentioned only one main house. This is Colonial Lanes up in Westbrook, Maine. I've never been there, but I know that we bowled right down the street from there at Westport Lanes. I've heard that this place is kind of tough. I don't really know much about it.
I've never been.
I've never set foot in there.
What's that, Rich?
I've never set foot in there.
Yeah. Again, I think that's good. I mean, I think generally when you think of bowling in Maine, I think we're kind of accustomed to thinking of houses that are south of Portland. Westbrook is, you know, in the Portland area. But, you know, it's good if it's tougher. I think I'm glad that it's on the schedule leading into the final event before the playoffs on April 9.
Yes, that is the final event before the playoffs, which playoffs will take place, like you mentioned before, Kyle, at Cape Ann Lanes in Gloucester, Massachusetts. Great house. I've always loved this place. They had an event there, I want to say 2 years ago. It was the 10 stringer.
Yeah.
Mark Strangio won that. And, you know, I've always been a huge fan of Gloucester.
Putney threw a 200.
Yes, he did. I do remember that. Pretty quick house, but you know, you still have to hit your shots. They do still have all wood lanes. They have a fully automatic scoring. I think it's by Cubica, and it's very up to date, very modern. Great house. Great house. I think it'll prove to be a good spectator house for playoffs.
As it should be.
Of course.
Because I think, you know, it's your biggest event. And, you know, the playoffs can, you know, considering how the scoring, I feel, and some others, I think, is how it plays out during the, I guess, the regular season, I guess, especially when it comes to the money at the end of it. I mean, you can win the playoffs and do okay during the regular season, and it, you know, things tend to even out, I think, for you. I'm probably not making any sense.
No, I think you're making total sense, Kyle.
That's good, though. I'm glad that you guys are paying attention.
Of course.
But it should be a great event, and it's an intriguing season, an intriguing schedule put out by the committee. And, you know, everyone is looking forward to the next event in Millis.
Okay, folks. So if you would like to find out more information about the Candlepin Pro Series, go to candlepinproseries.com, I believe it is. If not, you can just Google it. They do have a Facebook group. A lot of people have been joining the Facebook group. There's always real-time live updates on stats and everything. Check it out on Facebook. It's just search for the Candlepin Pro Series group. Become a member. Why not, you know, give yourself a shot at playoff bowling. The tournament, if you're a member, the tournament's free. So, you know, like we were saying before, if you have just that one good day, you could become a playoff bowler and, you know, win yourself some money. So check it out, Candlepin Pro Series, and we will be back with more after this on Alley Chat.
Hello, everyone. This is your Alley Chat recap of week one for the Friday Night Men's Pro League. We start off in East Boston as the defending regular season champions Lucky Strike take on last season's playoff winners Central Park. Only 5 pins separate these 2 teams as they split 4-4. Jonathan Boudreau's 395, the high triple for the match, and the Hall of Famer Hawk Hallis finished with 390, the high man for Central Park. Central will host Metro 1 this Friday, and Lucky will be at Woburn 1. Speaking of Woburn 1, new Pro Series doubles champion Justin Scally led off for his team as they traveled to face Dennis Nuzzo and Malden 2 as they took 6, building a 61-pin advantage in the first string and didn't let up. Rich Kochi finished with 374 in the 4-hole for Malden 2, and his opponent Josh Yaritz was high for his Woburn 1 team with a 379. Malden 2 will stay put and go against Malden 1 this Friday. Malden 1 had the distinction of featuring Alley Chat's own Frank Face, who holds the distinction of having the low single of the week of an 88, and the high single, which was a 161, as part of a 611 third string for Malden 1, their best of the night. And it wasn't enough, as Woburn 2 threw a 646, the high string of the young season, and Artie Gendro's 415 guided Woburn 2 to taking 6. Woburn 2 will host last year's regular season runner-up, Academy 2, next week. In week one, Academy 2 was consistent. They had strings of 543, 547, and 545. And they lost 8 at Union Street in Holbrook, as all 5 of the winners finished between 333 and 368. On to Riverwalk and their home opener against Nick Zuffalato in Metro 1 as they used Matt Pinkel's 407 to take 6 up in Amesbury. And a close match decided by 25 pins. This Friday, Riverwalk will travel to Ron's Ice Cream. The Granite State welcomes back Park Place into the Friday Night Pro League, but they were greeted rudely by the visitors from Ron's Ice Cream and lost 6. Anchor Chris Harris threw 387 for the winners. A home match for 2 teams in Bradford as Academy 3 played the host to Academy 1 and took all 8. Chris Bovair and Dave Godwin both went over 400, but threw 637 in the first string and never looked back. Mark Strangio's 377 was the high for Academy 1. And to close out week one, Metro 2 traveled up 128 to face the new entry Cape Ann and Gloucester and took 8, getting a 402 from Chris Casnava and a 403 from TJ DePietro. Cape Ann acquitted themselves well and got a 403 from rookie Corrado Pani, but it wasn't enough. Cape Ann will host Park Place this Friday. This has been your weekly recap of the Friday Night Pro League. For Alley Chat, I'm Kyle Bruce.
All right, folks, we're back on Alley Chat. My name is Frank Face. I'm your host, and I am with Kyle Bruce and Rich Lamoni, and we are here to talk about the recent Classic Candlepins Tournament of Champions. We just filmed that back in the last weekend of August, I think it was. Correct, guys?
The final Saturday in August.
Yes.
Like like the way Five used to do it with the True Value show.
There you go. And yes. So we ring true to the name Classic Candle Pins.
Correct. That's what we try to do.
We even had Din Brothers trophies.
That's correct, yes. They were furnished by Din Brothers. All five bowlers got a handsome trophy from Din Brothers. They did not get a handsome gift from the Parker Pen Company, though.
I'm disappointed. I'm very disappointed.
Nor did they get a Barca lounger from Rotman's. that reclines 2 inches from the wall.
That's just unfortunate.
Yep.
Yeah, I know it. Well, there's always next year. Season 2.0, like we talked about before.
Right, right. So, you know, we had a lot of interesting – this is a great ladder that we put together, or that the bowlers put together, really.
Yes.
First match was Brian Forney versus Tina Ward. We're, of course, not going to give you any more results after that, but – Kyle, what can you say about the tournament in general and, you know, everything leading up to it and then that match?
Well, one of the things that going into the tournament, I felt like we have a few storylines leading into it. And that was the that's really what I wanted to get across in our broadcast to our viewers, either it be in Amesbury on the local access or on YouTube.
Right.
And especially in that first match, you know, the two questions are, is Brian Fournier for real? Meaning, he had a great interview on this show with you, Frank, I felt, about his, I don't want to say transformation, but I mean, I feel like he's truly arrived. I mean, he averaged 122, including 120 on the road. He won the best, or the roll-off that had the most competition. And he beat Fuller when Fuller was at one point in time one of the hottest guys in Candlepin. Maybe not physically, but certainly in his skill on the lanes.
He's been the hottest for as long as I've known him.
That's true.
Yes. Physically.
God bless him.
I have no judgment in that category.
Well, that's good. Anyhow, and I love him. But anyways.
We all do.
Yes. So, you know, and it was a 328, so it wasn't a great match, but it's enough to get him in. So that's the one question, you know, is that 644 a fluke or, you know, what's going on here? He had the best year of his career to this point.
Oh, without a doubt.
In the four seed, you have Tina, who threw a 329 to beat Nikki McKeever, threw a double in the 10th box to win her ladder. And that narrative for me is she the best woman in the sport? I think she is.
I'd agree with you, especially at this particular point in time.
Right. And, you know, I mean, again, that's what this show is for. There's questions. There can always be a debate about it. And I think after watching these tournament champions broadcasts, you'll come to your own conclusion for it. But I mean, her record speaks for itself. I mean, she's bowled in some tough houses and has some really good scores, and she can really hang. And if there's one thing that I want to get through to anybody who wants to bowl on TV, or at least on our show anyways, as long as you're a pro, please go to a roll off and you know, try to get on TV. Gender doesn't matter here. And the only thing that matters to us is the best product possible. And the only way to do that is to prove it.
Of course.
And Tina's done that. And then, you know, going to the third qualifier, we have Keith Beaupre, who was the last qualifier for the tournament, who threw 349. And he had a big summer. I don't know if Rich wants to elaborate on that a little more.
He may have some experience with that.
Correct.
Thanks.
Okay, very good.
He beat me. I lost.
In any event,
expert analysis.
Yes,
there.
He bowled great. It was the best I had seen him bowl since I had bowled with him all summer, you know, watching him in Malden. He bowled phenomenal against me.
Well, not even really against you, just that particular tournament in general. I mean, you know, I don't know. Alley Chat, the crew, we filmed the Wakefield match between him and Jonathan Boudreau.
Right.
And you know, he didn't have the lead the entire time. He really didn't.
Right.
During the last string and a half or so, he really kind of just turned it up. And the Kyle, some of the shots he made that day.
Right.
Clutch. Just absolute clutch.
Yeah. I mean, he threw like 280 something the final two or 290. Right. And
at Wakefield.
You can. Right. So the thought going into that match is, you know, neutral house. Wakefield's a tougher house, you know. And, you know, I'm going to go right into it now. I mean, I have been on record as saying I think Boudreaux is the best around. So, and we all know about that rivalry between Boudreaux and Beaupre.
Yes.
So neutral house, tough house. That should answer a lot of questions. And on that day, it probably even opened another can of worms because it wasn't just the strike ball. He came from behind. He made some cut shots. He really gutted it out. And, you know, I think it was he threw 620 something or what have you, but another round in the knockout. So,
and you know, this is a guy who historically has been kind of known around the circuit to, for lack of better words, lose his head when he's kind of struggling. That wasn't the case this, you know, these particular matches. He just, I don't know what, you know, if he changed his approach or whatever, but he really figured out what he had to do and executed very well.
Right. So the question for Keith in the tournament, or at least my question was to our viewers, is that has he turned a corner in his career? Has he, found that level of maturity to be able to withstand the pressure of someone like a Boudreaux, for example, can put. And if he gets a double thrown at him, will he stay in the match? If he's, you know, if he's open four or five boxes in a row, will he stay the course and just be on the object, be on the head pin, you know, and keep going and keep fighting. And, you know, that's when it comes to him, that's that was, again, my question. And then the final one for Mark, who is our number one qualifier at 380. Yes, he he works at Riverwalk.
Right.
And, he runs that place. But Mark started off really hot last year and then tapered off.
Around Christmas time, something like that.
Right. And I said at one point in time, it was probably during Mark's ladder, I said in terms of Americans, I think Mark is in the top 10 at that point in time because the 13 season he had, he was ridiculous. Like he had a great 2013
season. He was around 130 or something, wasn't he?
Right. And, you know, I think Mark's numbers speak for themselves. But, in his ladder final, well, he beat Godwin just to get to the final against Freshy, who threw something like 1360 something. And when you combine the, because I think there was a couple of five stringers that were in there. I know he threw 680 something to be the number one qualifier.
Wow.
And he bowled really well. And he threw 360 or something in the match against Mark, but it wasn't enough. And the question is, well, I guess there's a couple things. Clearly, you know, obviously it's three strings. Bowling cold, will that be a negative? Can he rebound from was not the ending of last year that he wanted?
Right.
So you have all these things that are playing into it. And then, you know, there could have been, like I said, with Mark, it's easy to pick him as a favorite in a stepladder format. Say the same thing about Boudreaux, because like I said, I think he's the best around. But you can't tell me that, you can't have someone like Tina that can really get hot, especially there. She throws a nice ball, gets good mixing action. And, Keith's shown the ability to beat Boudreaux a couple of times in the past. So you have that kind of going. And then Brian came out of nowhere, like I said, won his roll off, had a great year. So you have that confidence building. And anything can happen. And that's what makes the tournament very compelling and why we hope that you go to the YouTube page for Classic Handle Pins and watch it, because we pulled out all the stops. And it looks different, sounds the best. And we have our five best going into the end of the season.
Indeed, I'd certainly agree.
Yeah, it's hard to argue. You know, there were some great matches in their individual ladders. We had some great bowling with Fuller, Dave Chesterkov. I mean, Chesterkov bowled great.
Yeah, I mean, that was a great match.
You know? He threw, you know, 171 string, something like that. It's just
right.
Unbelievable.
He had consecutive weeks where he, I mean, the week before that, he had a shot at 400. His ball worked. I mean, Dave's a great bowler anyhow. You know, we had some great bowlers last year. We really did.
Sure.
You know?
Sure.
You look at Godwin, who's a, you know, had to throw a mark at the 10th to beat Pereira. You know, Brandon Marks goes over 400. You know, there's a number of them. So, and we hope that they're back for the next season because we hope to be even better. We hope to have more bowlers at roll-offs and hope the competition is more, you know, tougher, stronger, and it'll only get that way if you have more bowlers.
Speaking of roll-offs, Kyle, we have some coming up, and we know that our next taping date is what, October 4th?
October 4th, 10 a.m. At Riverwalk Lanes in Amesbury. We tape 4 3-string matches, so it's a long day, but there should be some great action. They're all 5-string roll-offs. If you go to the Facebook page of Classic Candlepins, you can find the dates that are on there. The 5-string roll-offs, the initial roll-off is $40. You also have an option of a $30 re-entry as well if you don't like the position that your score had the first time around and you want to move up. You have that option. You can re-entry as many times as you want. Mm-hmm. And there's, you know, I think, you know, if you ask some of the bowlers that are around, I feel like, you know, in terms of prize money, Mark is pretty competitive in terms of payouts. And, you know, we try to be as, you know, we try to run a class show, even though I'm there. You know,
right.
And that's why we bring Rich.
I lower the bar on several in several ways.
No, you do not. You know,
it's our
yeah. You're like 6'4". You can't lower many bars, man.
I
got to raise
I
them
was,
to get.
I was 6'4" at one time. It's our intent to have a class candlepin bowling show that you know that represents the game and represents the industry in the way that you know we'd like to be. Scene.
Right. I think a lot
of
people,
you know, 3-strings, scratch, and may the best bowler win.
And that's what I was going to say. A lot of people identify with that format because of you know, historically, that's what we've seen over the years. Channel 5 was the 3-string format, scratch bowling, you know, head to head. That's just the way it was. And I think people appreciate that. We're the only show that does that at this point in time.
Right. And, you know, there was discussion about doing, you know, King of the Mountain scenarios like the way 5 did it. You win the roll-off, you're the next challenger for the going against the returning champion. But we feel like taking the top 5, you know, from the roll-offs really gives a, you know, a unique opportunity for the people that bowled and showed up that, well, the particular stretch of time to qualify. So we hope to see you there. We hope to see you on the 4th as a qualifier for the program
or an audience member.
Correct. Yes.
You know, it is, we have changed things to Sundays now.
Yes. Which is huge.
Yeah. That'll free up, you know, a lot of people's work schedules, whether you're a spectator or a bowler, please come down to watch us. We appreciate the fans and, you know, I think you make our show better just by, you know, making the place louder. Cheering on the bowlers, bringing the energy.
You guys can speak to this, obviously, more than I can because I don't bowl. But, I mean, if you're in a match like on Fridays or in the Worlds or what have you, and you have people that are there that are cheering you on and that are behind you, don't you find that that raises your game and that you find that you focus better and concentrate maybe a little more? And, you know, if you're coming off of a bad box that you maybe don't, let you get that. It won't get you down as much as it may have without that encouragement, perhaps.
I mean, using the Worlds as an example, it's a totally different beast. And yeah, the focus is, it has to be there because if it's not, you're in trouble because the other guy on the other side of the lane has the focus.
Right.
And you better have it or you're gonna fall behind quick.
Very quickly.
I mean,
the feeling of, you know, having a crowd watching, it's just unreal. It's really, you know, that's not something you're used to in a bowling alley. And when it does happen, it really kind of it amps you up and it gets you in the zone. And you want to put on the best show for people and you want to be the best you can for yourself. You want to beat your opponent. And, you know, to have an audience there, it just takes it to another level.
You know, I think one thing that needs to be said about our show, too, we reward consistency. Because it's a five-string roll-off, it's a lot harder to sneak into a five-string roll-off than it is a three-string roll-off. And the knockout, you know, the ladder is three strings. So it's a lot harder to sneak by your opponent three strings when it's one string. I mean, we just had a discussion about the Pro Series. Anything can happen. You have a six box, guy has a spare eight fill. That's a 12-pin swing.
Right.
You know, if I got two more strings, I can make up 12 pins in 20 boxes. You know, if that happens in the seventh box, oh my God, I have 8, 9, and 10 to make up 12 pins. The guy gets one mark. Now I need three or two anyway. You know, you're talking, you know, if he gets another good fill, you're talking 20 pins difference.
Right. And one of the things that we talked about, Rich, during the first show, well, Frank, you were there too, so you know you were in on that discussion, is that when you're taking a look at the course of the whole tape day, if you're on the first match, if you're in that 4-5 match, that's gonna and you want to run the table, that's 12 strings. So that's that clearly tests your endurance, your conditioning, and sure, you have to win those matches, but you have a lot of opportunity to make up for some of those bad boxes and kind of get into a rhythm, stay in your rhythm, maintain your timing, your composure. It's a great accomplishment to do that. I mean, there have been a lot of – I mean, obviously we're not the only show to feature the stepladder format, but it's not often seen that you have a bowler that qualifies in the four or the five that runs the ladder. That's all about that.
I don't think we've seen it yet, have we? Yeah, on our show.
Not on our show, no.
Right.
No.
So, you know that what you just said there, 12 strings, that's – you can go out to a 10-stringer, have a great day, and, you know, you're going to place or even win the thing, but you're constantly bowling. I think a lot of people don't necessarily realize about these tapings is that – you throw your three-string match. In between those strings, you have a small break. In between those three-string matches, you have maybe an even little a bit of a bigger break because your other guy's got to warm up. You know, things like that. So you have to get in the zone and keep that over a period of 12 strings, but not necessarily consistent strings.
Right, and it's two at a time.
Exactly.
As well, right. Which makes it even harder.
Right, where you know when you're bowling that much, a lot of people are accustomed to the five-string or five-box format.
Right. Exactly.
So, totally different beast.
And you move to separate lanes.
Correct.
So like if you're on lane 6 and you throw a hammer, you got to move to lane 7 and hope you find the same exact spot on lane 7.
Right.
Not easy to do.
No. Not everyone can do it. If it were easy, then, my fat ass would be up on fucking lane 7 for Christ's sakes. But
it's never too late, Kyle.
That's true. It's never too late. And it's also not too late for you to go to Riverwalk and, go to a roll-off and see where you are after five strings. And like I said, if you don't like where you end up, it's another $30 and you can, you have that opportunity as many times as you want before the final tape date to raise your score in an effort to get on TV.
So there you have it. If you'd like to be on our Classic Hamilton's TV show, I feel like we do a pretty great job, and you're not going to be disappointed with this Tournament of Champions. I know Kyle's in the process of editing it now. We've already seen one match. That was Tina Ward against Brian Fournier. Tina defeated Brian 375 to 325. Go on to YouTube and check it out. Not YouBoob, but YouTube.
Now, that's what you guys go on,
right,
I believe.
Later tonight, I will be on YouBoob.com.
YouBoob.
But as Kyle said, please, go up to Riverwalk, roll off, see what you got, and if you don't like it, do it again. Tape date of October 4th up at Riverwalk Lanes, and we hope to see everybody there. We will be back with more for Alley Chat.
This is Liz Moore, the executive director of the ICBA, and you're listening to Alley Chat, Candlepin Bowling's only podcast.
All right, folks, we're back on Alley Chat. My name is Frank Face, and something we wanted to talk about, again, I'm joined by Kyle Bruce and Rich Lamoni. Something we want to talk about, recently, we were invited by, the incomparable Liz Moore, the executive director of the ICBA, to be an associate member of the ICBA. And, three of us decided, you know, we got together, talked about it, and, we went forth, and we are now officially an associate member of the ICBA. And what that means is that we don't own a bowling alley. So, of course, we can't be a proprietary member. We can't be sanctioned and all that stuff. But we do provide what we consider a product to our listeners, and it's related to Candlepin Bowling. So that qualifies us as, you know, an ICBA associate member. We're very proud that this is the case. We now what we're most happy about is that we'll be able to go to all the ICBA meetings, which we've been to one in the past, but that was by invite only, and just to kind of feel things out and see if this is something we wanted to become a part of. And I think it's beneficial to us because, you know, there seems to be an administration in the ICBA that doesn't necessarily understand what's out there for candlepin bowling in terms of maybe technology or you know, things that can just benefit the game in general. I think by us being there and maybe having, you know, the I think being there and us having the opportunity to maybe speak at some of these meetings will kind of shed light on how candlepin bowling can approve or improve rather. And, you know, what's out there for the youth, well, how the youth can get more involved in the growth of the game. So, guys, how do you feel about this? I mean, ICBA is a pretty important organization in terms of candlepin bowling.
No, no question. And, you know, as we've detailed in many times, that, you know, it's the organization that really is out there to make any house better. And, you know, this is the, as Frank details many times, that it's the only, Alley Chat is the only podcast talking about the game. As I say, the greatest game that there is,
of course,
out there. And, you know, who better to be the voice of the game than Alley Chat? And I think this can be an effective way for proprietors to really get behind the show and really talk about who they are. And, because every house is unique, right?
Of course.
Yep. And, you know, this is just a really unique platform that, that I think the sport can really get behind. And sure, I mean, social media is great. But I think we've shown, or the sport has shown, that some reluctance to get into the 21st century. And I think Alley Chat will only push it over the edge. So I hope that we'll have many more fabulous guests.
And, you know, I've been talking to Liz Moore about this, and she's done a great job about getting the word out there. She actually went to a Western New England Candlepin Association meeting on Monday. And as an aside, actually, I should mention, we not only get access to the quarterly meetings for the ICBA, but now we're eligible to also go to state meetings. So MBA meetings, Western New England meetings, and the New Hampshire and Maine ones if we choose to do so.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, so that's something we're very excited about. And, you know, like I said, Liz has been getting the word out there, and some of the kind of heavy hitters, actually some chair people and board members have expressed the interest in coming on as an Alley Chat guest. Namely, perhaps the most important one would be the president, Ralph Sem. So we're looking forward to getting something arranged with him. Another chairperson who's interested in becoming a guest on Alley Chat would be Bob Perella. A lot of people like to talk, you know, about him because he makes, I guess you could kind of say he monopolizes the market in terms of candlepin bowling balls. So that, you know, I think we have a lot of opportunities here. It's really kind of something we can do to get involved, not as a proprietor, but maybe just kind of a voice of the game. We'd be kind of a voice for not only the bowlers, but also the administration of candlepin bowling.
No, I think that's great. I mean, Bob's been a guy that's been around forever, and beyond his company has seen the sport change and evolve, and in some cases decline too, with the especially recently with houses closing and such. So
sure.
He's very business savvy, and he knows how the sport needs to change, and I think it'd be interesting to hear what he has to say. Well, Frank, we've had discussions with him in the past, so he's very always interesting a good listen.
Yes, of course. So we're looking forward to that.
We'll bring the dunks and
I think the blazer. Important thing to note here is that there are people that reach out to us all the time. Bowlers, fans, whatever their relationship is to bowling. We can bring those conversations behind closed doors that people don't know how to speak to the IBA. We can speak on their behalf and actually possibly make changes. You know, from the last ICBA meeting, I still think they need to change a rule where you can throw a record if you have a string where you're allowed to sub in the middle of it. If we go up to the Worlds and throw an 850, which is an astronomical score, and break the record, if I subbed in one guy, it doesn't count. There should be a separate, you can call it a separate world record for string that has subs in it. But like, I think that's something they should add. And we can be a voice for the bowlers that don't associate specifically with the ICBA. I think it's a great thing. You should be very proud, Frank.
Oh, well, you guys should be proud as well. You're as much a part of it as I am. So
no, I wouldn't say that.
Oh. Well, I've employed you guys to be
correct
part of it. So, yeah. Yes. You know, like I said, we're very happy about this. And, you know, if you do have any questions about this, we'd love to hear from our listeners. A lot of people are kind of confused as to how we're, you know, able to do this, but they do have that, you know, separate membership. ICBA members do not have to be proprietors of bowling lanes. You don't have to be. You can, you know, for instance, Bob Perella with EPCO, Cubica is an ICBA member. They don't own a house, but they provide scoring systems.
Canopin Sales in Georgetown.
Exactly. Canopin Sales in Georgetown. They have the Z machines.
Right.
You know, JE Corp.
Right.
You know, they make ball racks and stuff like that. So there is this other aspect that probably most of the bowlers don't even know about, that make up part of the ICBA that interact and work alongside the proprietors of the lanes. And, you know, we're very happy to be part of it now.
Absolutely.
So, if you do have any questions, please contact us. You can always email me at frankface@alleychat.net, or just go to the website, alleychat.net, and hit us up, you know, the multitude of ways you can there. We've also started a mailing list, which is on the website as well. So we want to start sending out, emails to our listeners. So please go ahead and volunteer your email address. It's on the right hand pane of the website. I promise not to spam everyone too frequently, but you know, we want to send out updates and announce new episodes and so forth through an email list. So go ahead and sign up at alleychat.net.
Not to mention the schedule that we'd like to invite anyone who is running a tournament or what have you to go on to frankface.org.
You don't want to misdirect people, Kyle.
Yes, that would be bad because, you know, that could be – they could redirect you somewhere that is not very appropriate.
Not for child's eyes.
Correct.
But no, you are absolutely correct, Kyle. We do have a calendar on the website that I'm not sure everyone realizes. Everyone – I'm talking everyone – is able to – create events in our calendar and it'll show up on our website. So, if, for instance, if you're bowling a New England knockout bracket match or something, or if you're running, a 1 day tournament in Malden, or if you're running, you know, anything, and if you want the Canopin community to know anything about that's going on, such as roll offs, Kyle, or, you know, anything like that for, classic Canopins, you are able to enter your own, events in there, and it'll show up in our calendar. And we kind of want this to be a centralized location where we can coordinate tournaments and stuff like that to avoid conflicts. Now, a lot of people argue that conflicts are not good and everything, but I'd like to see Canopin get to a point where there's no choice but to have conflicts.
Yeah, because that only means that the game is getting stronger,
right?
And it gives the bowler a choice. I could go to the Pro Series 10 stringer. Or I have the opportunity to bowl on classic handlepins, for example.
Right, right.
And, you know, if it gets to that point where, you know, the game is strong enough to not have it hurt splitting the market like that, then I think that only means that the game is going in the right direction.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, the game once was very strong and always had tournaments going every weekend, and I think we can get back to that point. How do we do that? Well, I think one of the ways to do that is to document what is available to the canopin bowler and going on the website and taking a look is a good idea.
Right. And, you know, of course, strength in numbers, as long as we all kind of band together, we can make the game better than it has recently been. So.
Yes. That's our wish.
That is the wish of hopefully all the listeners too.
Yeah, exactly.
So.
I agree. I think, you know, the more information the bowler has, the more powerful the bowler has become. So, you know, if you want to listen, I mean, there's a lot of houses in Western Mass that have monthly King of the Hills. Masons, for example. You can put that on the calendar, and then everyone will know about it. Is there a way to do recurring?
I'm not quite sure, but I'll have to look into that, but So yes, folks, check out the calendar at alleychat.net. For my co-hosts, Kyle Bruce and Rich Lamoni, my name is Frank Face, and we thank you for listening to season 2.0, as Kyle calls it, of Alley Chat.